You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you for making us part of your regular routine, or your daily grind. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and we really appreciate you taking us along with whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. We're the Raining Jays, but today this Jay is by himself, or at least for the first two segments. I'm John Corrales, Jay King, Sam Jam Packard taking the night off. Today, I'm going to take you inside practice for an extended interview with Kyrie Irving. Well, the scrum with Kyrie Irving and extended sound from Marcus Morris. This from Kyrie Irving will be about his defense. Marcus Morris will be talking about kind of him fitting in with the rest of the team, the starting lineup, what he brings, his consistency. And then in the third segment, I will bring in Chris Manning from the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Chris does a great job with Locked On Cavs, and the Celtics on Friday night play the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we'll talk a little bit about the game. We'll talk a little bit about the guys who may, if the Celtics fall into some bad habits, hurt them, and how the Cavaliers are going to get out of their post-LeBron kind of mess. And so there's a lot to get to with me and with Chris, but for now, we're going to start with Kyrie. Kyrie said a few things there. So you understand what's happening is the Celtics on Thursday practiced. They had a practice that was scheduled to start at noon. The media was just kind of waiting. And at a little bit before 1 o'clock, we are allowed in. We don't get to watch the whole practice. We don't get to really watch any practice except for every once in a while, they'll raise the curtains from where we sit. So they let us in and they always bring out Brad Stevens, and then they'll bring out different players different times. So Brad spoke. I'm not going to give you Brad. Brad said a lot of Brad things. We always hear from Brad. Kyrie spoke, and he was asked a few different things about his assists and whatnot. But the big thing, I think, from the Kyrie talk was about his defense. He was asked about the steals, which are at right about a career high. His deflections, if you look at the statistics in the NBA, he is 7th in deflections per game and 8th in steals per game. So those aren't the end of the discussion stats when it comes to defense, but they're great stats and important stats for Kyrie Irving. So I'll get into more reaction when we finish listening to Kyrie Irving from practice today.
Kyrie, what's contributed to the amount of steals that you've been able to grab this season?
I don't want to psych myself out in terms of that. I think that just being in the right spots, as well as being aggressive off the ball, as well as on the ball, the point of attack, and just utilizing my quickness to my advantage. You're guarding some different positions sometimes, so you're able to use some of your instinctual things, gifts, to be in the right spot. So.
Within this defensive system, how has maybe just the way you approach defense, has it changed at all, just based upon like the particular style that you're playing with this group?
I think it's just a true challenge that I came into the season with of just wanting to put an emphasis on that end of the floor. That's really what it comes down to. I think in my career I've kind of gotten away with, just being an offensive talent, being a guy that has, just been solid, but never been a guy that I would say that just consistently brings it with that effort every single time down the floor. Now, I know I have responsibility of other things on the floor, but I don't think it should be an excuse for anybody, whether you're the leading scorer or whether you're the 15th guy off the bench. I think that that pressure on the defensive end matters in any game. So just try to put emphasis on it.
Do you hope that you giving that effort will inspire the rest of the guys to dig in on defense as well?
I think I don't think they necessarily need the inspiration from me. I think it should come from within. But I don't mind leading the charge as well as at the top of the key. But we have other great defenders on this team. I'm not the only one. So we, us as a team, we're great defensively when we're all locked in.
I wrote about this on RedsArmy.com. So if you go to that, and if you search me for me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John, if you're not a follower, I tweeted out the links, but it's there. And just a little taste of what I wrote about, some of the statistics there. Let's start with this. Kyrie Irving is playing okay defense. He's not playing lockdown defense. He's not playing all defensive team defense. He is playing decent defense. And for Kyrie Irving, that's huge. And he knows it. He admitted that. I like the way he said it. He was really trying not to sell himself too short. I think he was kind of trying to give himself a little too much credit. But when he says, I've kind of gotten away with just being an offensive talent, he is there admitting that he didn't play any defense. He said that a guy that's just been solid, which I think is overstating it a little bit, but he's not been the defensive guy that we, at least seeing him this season, not the guy that we know this season. When they made the trade, and when I was initially very, very skeptical of the trade, there was some question about, I mean, the defense, people said, well, he'll be better than Isaiah Thomas. My reaction was, will he? Really? I don't think that anybody who even said that believed that he was going to do what he's doing now. There's nobody who could believe that he's doing what he's doing right now, because he wasn't even thinking about doing what he's doing now. He started to put that emphasis on it, which is great. So the thing about Kyrie is, first of all, effort. That's the number one thing. Kyrie on defense, effort has been great. Generally speaking, he's had a couple of games where it has not been great. It has not even been good. That is, I'll acknowledge that. But at the same time, that's a couple of games where it normally would have been all games. So we have to accept certain things. Great offensive players are generally not your best defensive players. And you look at some of the best offensive guards in the NBA, and they are not even, they're not even what Kyrie is defensively. So it's important to kind of keep everything in perspective. So I think when it comes to Kyrie's defense, it's just been great that he has bought in. Great. I don't think that inspiration, when that question came up about the inspiration for him, or he was inspiring the rest of the team, I don't know that it necessarily inspires the rest of the team. Although I will say that Marcus Morris, and we'll hear from Marcus Morris in the second segment, but Marcus Morris did say in his scrum, when he was asked about Kyrie's defense, that it is being noticed that he's A, taking ownership and picking up the intensity, and that B, it is carrying over to the other players, because at least I think when you're playing defense, and it's, if Kyrie is playing defense, then everybody should play defense. Like, Kyrie's the guy that has gone his entire career not playing defense. So if you're, I'm just saying, Jason Tatum, just to say a name, don't take that in any further than just saying a name. But if you're Jason Tatum and you're thinking, well, I don't have to play defense because I'm this or that, well, Kyrie, who is the best player on the team, he's a guy who's gotten away without playing defense his whole career. Now he's here saying, you know what, I've got to put forth the effort. So I'm not going to overstate it by saying, oh yeah, he's leading the team and inspiring everybody, but he is an example for other guys who maybe aren't, or maybe think they don't have to be. And Kyrie is out there doing these things. So that means everybody's going to do these things. So if the one guy who's been getting a pass on this isn't taking that pass, then everybody's going to do it. So Kyrie Irving's defense, something that we've mentioned on the podcast a couple of times, but It's worth mentioning. It came up because Mark D'Amico from Celtics.com was doing the whole thing. That was his focus, so he was asking a lot of those questions. And so there it is. That's the scrum. That's Kyrie. He came out. We all put our microphones in front of his face, and those are some of the words that he said. You can get some of the words that Locked On podcast hosts around the network say by going to the Locked On NBA Net Instagram and Twitter accounts. Locked On NBA Net Instagram is going to be little snippets from around the network. In the stories, you usually get 1 minute, four quick 15-second clips of different podcasts, either the Locked On NBA or different podcasts for things that are going on you know, the night before, like the Warriors are on TV. So maybe you get a Locked On Warriors clip or something. On the Locked On NBA Net Twitter feed, you get a very nice curated feed of all of the Locked On podcast hosts on Twitter. You get all of the good stuff, none of the bad stuff. And it's like following the entire league just by following one Twitter account. So search for Locked On NBA Net on Instagram and on Twitter. Follow both. You'll enjoy it. Second man up in the scrum today at practice was Marcus Morris, who is awesome. He is so much fun. The one thing is he tends to be a little bit more soft-spoken. He doesn't speak as loudly, and you've got a lot of noise in that room. It's the Celtics practice facility. It's the two floors. Guys are out there shooting. Yeah, Marcus Morris is sitting there with a bunch of microphones in his face, but Marcus Smart is in front of him to his left on one court shooting. To his right, Gordon Hayward and Shimmy Ogilvy are going through a shooting contest. So there's a lot going on, a lot of basketballs in the background. You just heard that with Kyrie. So Marcus, a little tougher to understand. I think you can get all of it. So he was basically talking about, he was asked about the consistency, which he has been, and we've been talking about that a lot, the most consistent player on the Celtics team all year. Brad Stevens agreed to that. So that's the opening question about him and his consistency. And then it goes into him starting and what he brings to this team and in his adjustments as a member of this offense and a much more efficient member of this offense. I will react to that and give you some stats from something I also wrote on RedsArmy.com after we listen to Marcus Morris from practice on Thursday.
You know, Brad Stevens agreed that you've been the most consistent guy on the team so far this year. How have you been able to maintain that consistency when the entire team's been kind of up and down?
You know, just trying to control what I control. When I get out there, you know, rather than starting or coming off the bench, he's trying to do something with the minutes I'm getting. You know, obviously, I feel like I'm a matchup problem. So, either way that the offense goes, I feel like offense or defense, I can, you know, incorporate myself at a high level. Being able to, if I'm not scoring, being able to defend multiple positions and even offensively being able to, you know, stretch the floor and also, you know, rebound and, you know, just bring a lot of energy.
Are you bringing that same bench mentality to that starting?
Of course, man. You know, we've been struggling to get off a great start, so. You know, my main thing is, you know, start with some aggressiveness and, you know, and just to show them that, you know, it's going to be a tough game when you come here, you know, and, you know, early on, we just been, you know, at times soft. So, you know, just trying to, you know, up that tempo, up that pace, you know, up the demeanor with the first unit.
Do you feel like you guys might have found the right balance with that starting unit?
You think? Say that one more time.
You feel like you might have found the right balance with that starting unit?
You know, we're going to keep. Well, I'm not going to say it like I'm the coach, but we're going to keep, I'm guessing, that, you know, unit to see how it goes. You know, just, you know, by the guys out there and the guys that's starting off, you know, the communication is at a high level, the highest level since I've been here. You know, guys knowing where to be, knowing where to switch, talking things out, and, you know, understanding what's the goal here, you know, the beginning of the game. So, you know, I think it's definitely going to be different. You know, with our starting five, I think we're going to definitely get off to, you know, great starts and kind of, you know, make them feel it every time we go out there.
Offensively, how much does it help to having more defined roles?
You know, it's great. At the end of the day, man, you know, we are, you know, playing at the highest level. We know who the ball you know, who's going to have the ball in their hands and, you know, what other players need to do to create offense for themselves. And that's, you know, that's my main thing. You know, Guy Reed is going to have the ball. You know, him and I was going to play that high pick and roll, you know, and what I have to do is figure out, you know, different ways, and that's stretching the floor, cutting, offensive rebounding, you know, and getting my touches, you know, in the floor of the offense. So, you know, it's easy. I'm a veteran, you know, I didn't play with, you know, great players, so it's easy to, you know, to adjust.
When you have guards on the perimeter like Marcus Smart and Kyrie with the steals that you've been grabbing this year, when they're applying pressure, how does that change things for the second and third level defensively for you guys on the front line?
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, me and, you know, Smarty, on the other hand, you know, I think we kind of got that same mentality defensively wise. So, you know, we are always talking. And, you know, if he's getting beat, I'm covering for him. And I was doing the same thing. You know, we just on the string. And we understand, you know, different levels. Like you said, we understand different levels of the game. So if he's pressuring somebody and he gets beat, you know, I have to be there to help him. You know what I mean? He pull off and help my man. So, I mean, it's not much that we really talk about. We just both understand the game. We understand, you know, the mentality we need to have. And, you know, guys are just, you know, picking up where we're supposed to be at.
One thing you can say about Marcus Morris is that he is very confident. That dude, what he just says, I feel like I'm a matchup problem. He feels like he can go out there and score any place, anywhere, anytime. He is not afraid. He thinks that he's as good as it gets out there. And he's got that confidence. And you need that confidence in the NBA to go out there and shoot. So start with the consistency. I think him with that mentality is why he's so consistent. And if you feel like you can play anywhere at any time, you probably at that level, when you're that good, can will yourself into playing anywhere at any time. So he's one of those guys that's, I think he understands, and he says it later on, at the end of the day, we know who's going to have the ball. We know that it's going to be Kyrie. We know it's going to be Al running the high pick and roll. And he says, what I need to do is figure out different ways of stretching the floor, cutting, offensive rebounding, and so on. That is a very important self-awareness and awareness around the team. He, as confident as he is, also understands his role. And that is a very good example to the rest of the team, especially the younger guys. And you didn't hear it. I didn't play it. But he addresses that with the younger guys that it's kind of hard to figure out. He says afterwards that it's difficult for a bunch of guys who have had a ton of success last season to come in here and try to accept these roles. And I think for Marcus Morris, he can show these guys how to accept a role, how to prepare yourself, whether you're going to be a starter, whether you're going to be on the bench. How do you prepare yourself to do these different things and do them well and do them consistently? So that's an important thing. You know, Marcus Morris, this season has been invaluable. And I just can't believe, like, a guy that we came into the season thinking that he could probably be traded. And the Marcus Morris of last season probably could have been. The Marcus Morris of this season has really showed a lot. The other thing that he says that is, I think, is super, super interesting is it was kind of almost like an oh, by the way. But he talks about when he's getting rid of the pull-ups and he's trying to step behind, step back for three a little bit more often. And I didn't actually play that part of the soundbite, but he says later on that one thing he's trying to do is shoot a high level and try to limit his pull-ups and stepping out to three more. And I wrote on RedsArmy.com about that particular quote. So you can go and get all of his written quotes on RedsArmy.com. Again, my link, I tweet out the links on Twitter, RedsArmy_John. Marcus Morris really has done a wonderful job this season and is having the most efficient season of his career. His player efficiency rating is at 15.3. It's his highest point of his career. 15 is league average. So his efficiency has been below league average for a long time. It's part of the ISO MOOC. Now it's slightly above average, above league average, which, and the player efficiency rating is not the most be-all, end-all stat either. It's flawed. A lot of these stats are all flawed. That's why you got to take a lot of them into account. But his true shooting percentage at 61.7 is another career high. He mentions his rebounding defensive, and total rebounding percentages are at a career high. The thing that's really interesting about Marcus Morris is that he's completely, well, okay, let me rephrase that. He has significantly cut back the mid-range category, especially the long mid-range. So when he was in Detroit before the Celtics traded for him over that summer, that year before he came to Boston, 52% of his shots came from mid-range. More than half of his offense was coming from the mid-range. This season, 32% coming from mid-range. That is an amazing reduction over the course of 2 years that the Celtics have gotten him to focus on that, and to see a 20% drop in just a couple of seasons. 16% now, just 16% of his shots are long twos. So that's the lowest point of his career since his second year in the league. And that was only for basically two-thirds of the season. 44% of his offense, 44% of the shots that he takes are now threes, which is the highest number of his career. And he's hitting those threes at 43.2% right now. So that's efficiency. That's what gets you a higher efficiency. So shout out to Marcus Morris for working and doing this. I say in my headline, forget ISO Mook, Boston Celtics forward Marcus Morris has a new focus. It's a little bit of a stretch in the headline because he's still isolating technically at the same rate that he has in the past. It's just that those isolations are more in, they're resulting in getting to the rim or they're resulting in threes. So the ISOs that we've seen in the past that we kind of got pissed off and saying, oh, there's ISO Mook. That's gone away for the most part. He's really worked hard to eliminate that. It's very important for him to, again, we're looking at this and framing it as leading the young guys. I will say Jason Tatum with a purpose right now, because Jason Tatum is notorious for taking those long twos. And he has, now looking at Marcus Morris, he has a guy that has historically taken those same long twos and now is working to eliminate those from his game. So important. Marcus Morris doing important things for the Celtics on the floor and as a leader, as an example for other guys around him. So very important season for Marcus Morris. And we're getting to a point now where I'm starting to wonder if there's a way we can keep him around. And I don't think there is. And maybe some of this is contract year stuff. Maybe this is just him saying, this is how I have to play to get a contract. Well, great. But I feel like this is also him saying, this is what the team needs me to do. And this is how I need to play. Whether it's contract year or not, he needs to play like this moving forward. So kudos to him for doing that. When we come back, Chris Manning joins me to talk about the Cavaliers and the Celtics Friday night game and the Cavs future post LeBron and cleaning up the mess that included emptying out the cupboard to try to keep LeBron happy and keep him around and build a winner around him. First, I want to send a little message out to those of you who own companies, who are business owners looking to reach new customers. Your company could be mentioned right now. This is where I would normally be reading a sales read for your company, except I don't have one, and you could be it right here, because podcast listeners are the best way for you to advertise. It's better than advertising on the radio, because podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their podcasts. Podcast listeners in general are more educated and they earn more. Think about it. The people who listen to podcasts have to have the devices to listen to the podcast. The people who listen to the podcast are generally listening to it, to the podcast, on their commutes to work. That's where the podcast listener is. So if you want a listener who, again, 60% more likely to to interact with sponsors, who is more educated, who is earning more than a traditional media audience, you've got to sponsor this podcast. Our demographic happens to be 98% men. So if you need men in that category, if you've got a product that appeals to men in that category, that's our dominant audience. We've got women who are listening, but our audience is 98% men. So if you want to target that audience, email us, LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com, LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com, to advertise with this podcast. Let's bring in Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast. Chris, how you feeling, man?
I'm doing good. As always, it's good to chat.
Yeah, man. So here we are, Celtics-Cavs. Doesn't exactly have the same ring to it as it has in the past. But look, you've been paying attention to everything. And look, the Cavs have had not a lot of wins, but the wins that they've had have been pretty good. You got to be feeling – do you feel confident at all? Do you think maybe the Cavs can come in to Boston and take advantage of a Celtics team and maybe steal one?
I would have been more optimistic for their chances, if they had kind of finished the Thunder game better. But if you look at the first half, their offense was pretty decent. But then you look at the second half, it was complete muck. It was in the mud. It doesn't do very much. It's relying on Jordan Clarkson making a bunch of shots. It's a team that, if you look at any evaluation, is like heavily reliant on the mid-range. So I think if anything, this is a very good game for Boston to kind of come in, get a game at home, even though they're down, two guys in Horford and Jaylen Brown. It should be a game where they can like have their way with a lot of stuff. Like if David Nwaba doesn't play, which we don't know as of yet, I don't know who's going to defend Tatum. Kyrie's going to be able to do a lot of things against Colin Sexton. He's kind of the point guard in this long streak of Colin Sexton going against good point guards that I think he's going to struggle with the most because of how he responds to really good dribbling and twitchiness. And that's kind of just like what Kyrie does is how he's just going to piece him apart, I think, will be a struggle. I think they've had games where they've responded really well, and it could break that way. Especially if they kind of play with energy, but this is just a bad team. The Kyle Korver trade means they have even less shooting now. So I think if you're Boston, you have to hope that this is a game where you come in, you're playing a bad Cavs team and can kind of dominate them on your home floor, even if you had your own struggles of late.
I will say that the official Cavaliers report has Nwaba is out for this game. So that's one less guy that you guys have. The Celtics have had this season serious issues defending pick and roll and defending guards who can penetrate and the big time scoring guards, like people like across the board, Kemba Walker to Trey Burke to JJ Barea even torched the Celtics. So you've got Colin Sexton, you've got Tristan Thompson. Thompson's a good screen setter. He can roll, he can get those alley-oops. Sexton seems like he can be a pretty big scorer. Do you think there's any possibility here that what is it about Sexton here that might be able to torch the Celtics?
What he does well is he's very fast, and he's a guy that is going to make you pay, and he gets downhill if he can get a good ball rolling, like a good head of steam going downhill. You're right, Tristan Thompson sets really good screens. It's not something they do maybe enough of. But you will see some of it. The key here is Colin Sexton has to kind of, when he has a really good game, I find that he's getting to the rim more, and he's at least making an effort to get there and get in drawing fouls, even if he's not making a ton of shots at the rim. Right, he's getting downhill. When he has a game where he settles for mid range shots, he's had good games where he's done that, but he gets in this habit where he kind of just gets to the spot on one of the elbows. And he pulls up and he shoots, and he doesn't really like make an effort to do anything else. If he does that, that's a win for Boston because it just means you're going to keep your bigs out of foul trouble. It means, Tristan Thompson is not going to get easy lobs. I mean, Texan's best moment, I think, in the last 2 weeks was he threw a lob to in the game they just lost this week on Monday. He threw a lob to Tristan Thompson that might have been the best pass he threw all season. Was it like a perfect read or anything like that? No, but he like actually slowed down, read the defense, made the right pass. If he does stuff like that, that will help. But if he doesn't, I think if you're a defense, you can very much live with mid-range shots. And I think even then, like if he does pass, the Cavs aren't exactly loaded with shooters. This is a team that just doesn't have a lot of knockdown spot-up guys right now, and especially so with Korver out. So I think just though you'll see some very predictable things. I think if Sexton gets hot, he can definitely do damage, but it's really relying on if he's hitting a shot on a given night more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like with so many guys out, I mean, they're missing like we said, Mbamba, obviously Kevin Love, Hill, Decker, Smith is gone. This is a pretty not only a team that's struggled a little bit, but they're missing a lot of guys. Is there a possibility here that a Rodney Hood come out of nowhere game can burn us?
I would say one of the two things, if you're worried about a random game, it's either Jordan Clarkson goes crazy and he's done that more than Hood, or Hood does it. Both of them are certainly capable. Both of them are going to get a lot of touches, but Clarkson less so of late, actually. He's done a really nice job, I think, of trying to take more threes and be more aware of what he's doing. But Rodney Hood will do a lot of dribbling into the lane, dribbling into contested twos, shot kind of rougher two shots instead of shooting the three sometimes. But it's possible. I think you're kind of hitting on something I think that's really important about the Cavs offense is like, it's not, you know, it's the last time I checked, it was like 20th in the league in offensive rating. I think it's probably dipped a little bit since then, but it's really relying on guys just kind of getting in the flow of the game and having big nights. It's not really relying on like a scheme or reliant on a set of plays or a set of principles, right? Like it's really, you're hoping that certain guys just get going in the flow of the basic stuff they're running. It's not complicated. It's not anything particularly to write home about. It's just like, did Jordan Clarkson get hot tonight? Did Colin Sexton get hot tonight? Did Rodney Hood get hot tonight? That's really what it is. So if those guys struggle, like the Cavs could score 80 points, I wouldn't be surprised. As much as it could be like Rodney Hood drops his 130-point game of the season or something like that.
But let's be real here. It's not about winning. Like beating Boston might make you feel good for a minute, but you got bigger things going on. So I think the big story here with the Cavs is how do you recover post LeBron? And LeBron's gone. You've started to see the Cavs trade away. They traded away Korver and they brought back Burks from Utah. And I guess the big thing here is how much more do you think the Cavs are going to do? Is Kevin Love gone? And then just how are you feeling about where the rebuild is starting to go and what they've started to do so far?
They're in selling season. It is open season for this roster. I think George Hill's 100% should be gone by the deadline. I think Jarrett Smith's in the same boat. If they can find a team, wants to take him. And I think at the very least, these are two guys that have minimum very small guarantees in their contracts for next year. So if they want to help a team with bad contracts clear up cap space, that's the way to do it, right? Like you take on like the $3 million that Jarrett Smith or the $1 million George Hill's owed, you eat that $1 million instead of like $20 million, however much Nick Batum is making, you do something like that and right. Help a team kind of make money. That's what they should be doing. If you just look at the Alec Burks trade for Korver, like they got the two picks that, assuming, and I think it'll be that way, that they keep their top 10 protected pick each of the next 2 years, that pick conveys into two second rounders. They got two second rounders in that trade that will replace the ones they're going to lose to the Hawks. So like that's the mode they're in right now. Kevin Love, I think, is an interesting question, and I'd love to kind of hear your take on this, because my theory in this is he's been out for a while. He wasn't good to start the year. He's got this big contract, and I don't think that's an untradeable contract, but I think he'd have to be playing well for a team to really take it on. It could be like a Blake Griffin thing. That's not a new theory, but I think it's more likely that happens come summertime because, number one, he's going to come back in 2019. I don't know, unless the team's really desperate, I don't know if they're pulling the trigger on him right before the deadline. Secondly, I think he might make him, his value might be the highest if he can come back, look healthy, finish the year well, and in the summer post free agency, when that cools down and teams miss out on star players, they can talk themselves into trading a good amount of stuff for an all-star caliber player in Kevin Love. That's kind of my theory on Kevin Love. But if he got traded by the deadline, would I be shocked? Not at all. He's, I think pretty much everyone on the roster probably sends their upcoming picks, Sexton and Jetty is, I think pretty much everyone else is probably fair game at the right price.
Yeah.
Nance, too. I should add that in there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that I don't think Kevin Love finishes out that contract as a member of the Cavs.
No, not at all.
It's kind of go back and forth on the deal. I think it might have been actually kind of smart to sign him to that deal the way they did, because other stars at that point, when he's making $30 million, like John Wall will be making $40 million. So there's a team that's going to say, well, I mean, Kevin Love, John Wall, obviously very different players, but in the grand scheme of things, they're at their best, they could be close to the same tier. And at Love, with Love at $10 million less, I could see a team like Phoenix, when if they get a top five pick and you've got Ayton and Booker, and let's say, you know, if you guys get Zion, which everybody, that's the prize, and if they get like Cam Reddish or Barrett, then maybe they take one or two of those other young guys and flip him to a team that needs young guys, the Cavs, and they need an established guy, Kevin Love, and he's not making $40 million, he's making $28.9 million. I could see something like that happening. So,
yeah, I agree. I think Charlotte or Phoenix would like make sense. You know, I think like Charlotte could want someone to play with Kemba, get off some bad money.
Yep.
For less bad money, for less bad contracts. Phoenix, obviously, just that's just he's not only do they like want good players and want to be better, but like James Jones and Kevin Love are very tight. And as far as to my knowledge, James Jones is the GM of that team right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that factors in or not. That's speculation on my part, but I could see that being a thing. And like, would getting Kevin Love to help Ayton, to help Devin Booker, to, you know, take pressure off like Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges to be scorers, like I think that sounds like it makes sense. George Hill, I think, actually would make a lot of sense there too, as a defender and a guy who doesn't have the ball on his hands. I'm just saying, Phoenix, like, well, the Cavs will gladly eat the T.J. Warren contract off your hands. Like, they'll gladly do that. Like, they just give a pick and you can have some stuff. Like, they're open for business. So,
but this is. I'm sorry, this is how teams rebuild. You do things like, okay, fine, we'll take the Batum contract from you, but you gotta pay us to do it. You gotta attach a first round pick. Like, you gotta give us something in return for getting that money off of your books. And you gotta be willing, and I don't know if the Cavs are willing, but you gotta be willing to pay a little bit. They won't go over the tax to do it, obviously, but if they can do it, stay under the tax, take on a bad contract for a year that you're going to be bad anyway. Who cares? Take that on, and then you get that pick, and that guy goes away, and then that's part of the rebuilding strategy. Now, Batum is maybe not the best example because he's under contract for basically two more years with this player option, but you get my point.
I agree with you 100%.
So I think the Cavs could be in position, but it's going to take some shrewd moves, man. It's going to take some shrewd moves. So, all right, we'll see. Celtics-Cavs, Friday night, tonight. We'll see how that goes. Hopefully for us, for me, from the Celtics perspective, it goes well. And hopefully for you, from the Cavs perspective, a bunch of young kids play well and they still lose. That's probably the best case scenario, right?
Everyone wins if the Celtics win this game.
Colin Sexton drops 30. You know, Jenny Osmond comes in and has a decent game. Celtics win by 20, and that's it. That'd be great.
Yeah. Everyone goes home happy.
All right, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Chris Manning. Follow him on Twitter at CWMWrites. That's like I write with a pen, W-R-I-T-E-S, at CWMWrites. He is excellent. He does a fantastic job with the Locked On Cavs podcast. He's also with Fear the Sword. If you need anything Cavs related, he's the guy to go to. Awesome guy. Great coverage of the Cavaliers there. Of course, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at @RedsArmy_John. Jay King of The Athletic is at @ByJKing. Sam Jampackard is at Jam Packard. That's the three of us on Twitter. For all of you new listeners, if you are a new listener, and I say this every podcast, and I mean it every podcast, every single new listener is awesome. I know some of you are relatively new. Some of you are just tuning in for the first time. Some of you have been around forever. I love you all. I really do. It's so awesome that you guys listen to us. It's so awesome that you take us with you every day or almost every day, however often that you do. It really means a lot, and it's beyond my comprehension sometimes that so many of you do. It's awesome. If you are a listener and you haven't subscribed, go ahead and subscribe. It goes right to your podcatcher, whatever it is. If you do like Stitcher, or I do Pocket Casts, if you do Spotify, we're on Spotify. Of course, iTunes and Google Podcasts, we're there too. Subscribe, so it just shows up whenever we post. If you are a subscriber, wherever it is allowed to give us a rating, a five-star rating, please do that. Please give us that good review. It really does help. I say it, I mean it. It really does help, because people view these ratings and view these podcast reviews, and that helps them make a decision, if they're not on social media, to get the podcast to actually listen and subscribe. So please do that. I very much appreciate that you do. And if anybody asks you what podcast they should be listening to, please tell them that it should be the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.